So we talked about the preparation to build the temple. We talked about how David gave the floor plan to Solomon. We've talked about the covenant that was made with David about the temple being built and his throne being established. And now we're here. Now we're to a point where the kingdom is solidly in Solomon's hands and the temple will be constructed. So to start class, if everything's still good. I want to play a short video, not this one, to give us an idea of what the temple looks like. So we've got the temple, the bronze altar. We've got the what they call the sea or the brazen sea in the front. This being the bronze altar. And we'll get into dimensions in a little bit, but this is what they made sacrifice on. As people brought animals in for their sacrifice, their burnt offerings. We have the what they call the sea or the brazen sea, cast of bronze with three oxen per side facing north, south, east, and west, filled with water for the priests to wash. Oh, sorry. Oh. Best laid plans. All right, so there is a depiction. Can y'all still see that okay? Better? All right. These are the basins and the stands. These were for cleaning the offerings beforehand. Here you have the two bronze pillars that were cast by Hiram. These are what they call the capitals on top, and we're entering into the temple. Into the holy place. In the holy place, we see that it's overlaid in gold. It had the lampstands. It had the altar of incense. It had the table of showbread. It's been carved out. And you move through it to the most holy of holies. We would call that the lampstand, not the menorah. And that may not be an accurate depiction of what the lampstands look like based on what I read for the tabernacle, because it doesn't give us the actual design for the temple. The temple itself had artistic windows. It was very ornate. Here's the table of showbread. It was covered in gold. Everything was gold, utensils, bowls, everything like that. The altar of incense. Now moving into the inner sanctuary, the holiest of holies. Here are what we would call the cherubim. Now this is by far not an accurate depiction of it from the standpoint of we don't know what cherubims look like and how they cast them. The wingspans, yes, but how the cherubim would look like, we discussed in a class before in a depiction that David gave that they were more human-like, with maybe four different faces and arms and maybe four different wings, but this is the depiction given here. I can tell you that the wingspans are correct on this, and this is where the Ark of the Covenant sat underneath, in the holiest of holies. All right, that's enough of that. So, that kind of gives you an idea of what the temple would look like. Now let's get into the nuts and bolts of it all. So here we have the temple, and we have all the things that are around it and that are described in 1 Kings 6 and 7 and in 2 Chronicles 3 and 4. 2 Chronicles 3 and 4 is important because something's not mentioned in Kings that is a focal point here. So here we have the temple. All right, what are the dimensions of the temple itself? 60 cubits long and how wide? All right. So 60 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, 30 cubits tall. So this is the dimensions that we can see here. It's interesting, and I couldn't figure this out, whether this was an exterior or interior measurement. It may have been an interior measurement for the fact that it talks about the sanctuary size and the inner sanctuary being the holy place and the most holy place. and what their dimensions are. We don't know how thick the stone was, but that's the way it's described, is 60 by 20 by 30. And these are cubits. Anybody tell me what the conversion of a cubit to a foot is? 18 inches, about a foot and a half. So you figure this is 90 by 30 by 45. Pretty big building, considering. Now, it's only, if you use those dimensions, 2,700 square feet, but it's a very large, it's a large building for the standpoint of very tall, consider what we're in now. I don't know, this building may be 40 foot wide in depth, but you think about how tall it would have been. And then for the undertaking of what to build it in that time frame. I'm thinking kind of like the school across the street. I don't know, that might be a better representation as far as just size of what it would be. So you have the dimensions of the temple as 60 by 20 by 40. Then there was the front porch. So the front porch, I gave you the dimensions again. What the front porch was 20 cubits wide and 10 cubits deep. Now, question, how tall was the porch? 20 cubits? Anybody else? I don't think we can know that for sure. How'd you come up with 20? Because I think you're correct or close to it, but how'd you come up with 20?
The porch was in the front of the house.
If you're reading there, that's 20. That's 20 foot. 20 foot. I think it says depth and then width, but they're actually reversed. 20 foot wide and 10 foot. So the only way that I could figure out maybe a height was it talks about the pillars. And the pillars in one area, it says there were 18 cubits, and then another says it was 35. So the porch may have been, and in your second picture you can see, the porch may have been less than 30 cubits based on the pillar size and the way that they were using that as structural components. And then pillars would have gone on top as well. So that's on the second picture. Probably 22 cubits, something along those lines. So this may be an accurate depiction. What is not accurate in this picture? The pillars. So it does say, and this is where, again, comparing different contexts or different parts, Kings to Chronicles, is interesting. Kings only says the pillars are 18 cubits tall. But, and you go to Chronicles, it says they're 35 cubits tall. Well, how do you explain the discrepancy? I would suggest to you it's above and below the roof of the porch. Maybe 18, then you go up on top and then it says they're 35. You know that the Bible's not telling you something wrong, so it may be like what your bottom picture shows. The column continues up either through the roof or continues on top of the roof to get to a 35 cubic height, which would be about 52 and a half feet.
Gene,
yes, sir.
You've already been alluding to this since you got the picture up.
Yes, sir.
It's easy for people to be able to see. There's hundreds of pictures.
There is.
And they're not all the same.
They're not.
Like the pillars, some of them have inside the porch.
Yes, sir. So, again, this is just an idea of general concept of what it's going to look like, because this doesn't even show them as structural. Most likely they were structural as a column, but what we're wanting to see is just kind of how, get a visual of what this would be, and then use the scripture to actually give us context on sizes and construction and whatnot. Here again, that's not correct based on what the Bible is teaching. They're going to look a little different, because How many different types of flour are there? How many different types of, you know, gourd is there? That we're going to talk about those things. Somebody may cast a lily different than another, and that's what the capitals were cast of. And so there's those things as well. Sorry. All right, moving on. So there you have the dimensions of the porch. Now, here's really where I got confused, and we're going to talk about it in just a second. Oh, there's the artistic windows. It says it has artistic windows, or had windows, but here's what I got confused on. Anybody read about the side chambers and the stories and whatnot? This was really something helpful for me as far as understanding how the construction of the temple was and this component of it. So it had side chambers. Where were the side chambers located? Your drawings have it, so you can look at your drawing on your picture too. The bottom picture shows kind of where the side chambers would have been. Then on all three sides, these are not included in the dimension of the temple itself. The temple was 60 by 20, but then you had side chambers that went on all three sides, both left and right and back. These side chambers were storage areas. So there you have the side chamber being added in our graphic. And so the side chambers, three stories. All right, they were all 5 cubits high, but then the bottom was 5 cubits wide, the second was 6 cubits wide, the third was 7 cubits wide. That's because the walls were offset. The wall conjoining the temple was offset so that no beam would be put into the sanctuary, the any sanctuary. So the walls were offset so that the floors of the side chambers could continue to build. So that's why you have 5 cubits, 6 cubits, 7 cubits. All right. Stairs. Anybody know about the stairs in these things? Again, this is very detailed. So if you have an answer, great. Otherwise, this was hours of study to get all this, to kind of understand all this. This depiction is inaccurate. It said that it had winding staircases to the middle and the third floors. This is showing just a ladder going up. Where are the staircases? I don't know. Exactly what the winding staircase would look like, I don't know. But they had, was there more than one to get through? I don't know. But it had winding staircases to get from one story to the next, to the next. So there your offsets into the outer wall to be able to put the floors in for the side chambers at the five cubic height. It specifies that there was a doorway on the right side of the temple in the right store chamber, and that side of the store chambers. I don't read anywhere else where there was any other door, so there may have only been one access to all these store chambers. On the right side of the temple, on the bottom floor, and then you may have been able to enter all the other cavities through the staircases. You having fun yet? Now it's interesting to me as we look at this, just how we build things today versus how things were built then, and we're going to get into that process in a little bit. But you think about the undertaking it took to be able to create this sort of stuff. It's easy just to show a computer graphic, but how this was built with stone and with wood and with everything else, and how long. It only took, well, I'll ask that question. How long did it take to build the temple? 7 years. That's, you know, it seems like it takes that long to work on 45, or it seems like it's taking that long to work on 1960 or 2100. But, I mean, 7 years in that time is not that bad considering what they're building and how they're doing it. All right, so now we move into the different cavities of the temple. Can anybody tell me what the cavity is on, the biggest cavity is? The holy place. All right, that's the holy place. What's the dimension of the holy place? 40 by 20. It was 30 foot high. I mean 30 cubics. I'm going to get feet in cubics. If I'm saying feet, it's cubics unless otherwise specified. So the right side cavity, you got the porch, then the right side cavity, the larger area is the holy place. And then you have, what's this? The smaller one. The holiest of holies, or they call it the inner sanctuary. All right, what was the dimension of the inner sanctuary? 20 by 20 by 20 by 20. That's 420, sorry. 20 by 20 by 20. Do we know that, like in this picture, that it was raised? It doesn't give us that information. Again, this is artistic license. It doesn't say that it was raised. It doesn't say that it was floor level. This is just how this is depicted here. It gives us information about doorposts and stuff like that, but it didn't say anything about stairs or anything else. So when we talk about the temple in and of itself, it was built out of stone. So were the side chambers. Had artistic windows. excuse me. The inside of the temple was covered in cedar. Unless I'm missing something, it says cedar and cypress, but I've seen them used interchangeably when it talks about the holy place and the holiest of holies. When it says cedar and cypress for covering the interior of the holy place and the holiest of holies. On the inner sanctuary, the covered in cedar, walls and floors, and then the cedar was overlaid with pure gold. let's see here. There were drawings of chains of gold across the front of the inner sanctuary, and it says he overlaid them with gold as well. Keep going here. There we go. All right, then we have our cherubim that they're showing. Again, we don't know what it looks like. We do give dimensions for the cherubim themselves. So what were the, does anybody know what the cherubim were made of or their dimensions or anything along those lines? They were made out of olive wood. Sir?
10 cubits high.
Man, you're on a roll. Do you know the wingspan? 20 for both. So 10 and 10, each wing being five cubits. So the idea is that a wing would touch from the wall to the middle of the room, and then the other wing would touch the other wing into the wall. And there, that's where they would put the Ark of the Covenant underneath it. And it said it was covered, the wings covered the Ark of the Covenant. Question that I don't have an answer for, and this may be for later on, or maybe somebody can inform me now. When it mentions that the Ark was covered by the wings, was that any, is that just descriptive, or does that have a relevance or a specific meaning? Because I couldn't find that out. Maybe a good question for another time. So everything was overlaid in gold. The walls were carved with engravings of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. So the first video I showed you was more detailed as far as this goes. This is just kind of, you know, looks like wallpapering up. But the idea is we don't know in what ways they were covered, but it says they were carved. I don't know for sure, but you would think that maybe they carved the cedar and then overlaid it in gold as opposed to carving the gold once it's been overlaid. But everything, there was no stone to be seen inside the temple. So everything was covered by wood, carved, overlaid in gold, or overlaid in gold and carved, so that it was very, very ornate, very, very, what you call high end. All right, again, artistic license here, but you kind of get the idea of what was going on there. So into the holy place, same thing. Into the holy place. The holy place was also covered in cedar. It also had carvings on the wall. Now the what it calls the house, but the sanctuary or the holy place had carvings of gourds and open flowers, also along with the cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. So it had more carvings with different things than the inner sanctuary did. So this is the basic layout of the temple. All right, so the doorways, this was something else that I found interesting. It talks about the two different doorways. It talks about one doorway being four posts, that's into the holy place, and then another being five posts into the innermost sanctuary. So best I could tell, because when it said four posts and five posts, I was thinking more like Pentagon or something like that. But it was how many times, I guess, it was kind of inlaid, how many times it, you know, how many frames you had. And so here we see that there are five doorposts into the inner sanctuary. Also, it's interesting that it says each door had two leaves that pivoted. So essentially, based on the description, this seems to be accurate, that there would be bifolding doors. And so you think about how heavy those were and what they would have to do to make that work. They had to cast the hinges and everything else, but in essentially it's a bifolding door. Now, it's not something you think about back in the time of, you know, David and Solomon, 1000 BC. I also wonder what quality you get, because if you ever had those closet doors, you don't want to open and close, you know. That's something else too. But, you know, these doors pivoted, and they were doors made of cypress. They were decorated and ornate. Carved with cherubim, palm trees, open flowers, and overlaid with gold. So again, this is kind of an idea of how it looked. Whether it was a stairway to it or not, we don't know. If y'all have any questions or comments, I mean, this is the best way I know to do this. And so if y'all have any questions about this, this is just try to give you a mental image of what the temple looked like. Outer doors. So this is what people could see when you came into the inner court where the temple was. You're going to see these outer doors. The doors, again, four post pivoting doors, overlaid in gold, and carved with cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. That's true. And you think about that after, you know, this temple isn't what Jesus saw in the time of Jesus saw in his time. I mean, what he saw in his time was something way less ornate, more maybe what you consider functional, but it wasn't like this. I mean, the people turned their hearts from God. They were taken into captivity ultimately by the Chaldeans. You know, the temple was torn down. And yeah, those who had gone into captivity and known what the temple looked like, and they came out and they built the temple, how sad, I don't know if you'd say depressing. It's not about what you want it to be, but what place this was for God to be glorified, to God to be worshipped. You know, it's his dwelling place here on earth. And that's a turn of phrase we'll talk about in another class. But that was his house. This house was meant to exalt God. And so how great. He deserves all the fine things. This is what you're wanting to show your God, how much you love and how much he deserves and what he means to you. This is the way they had to do that. And then it gets torn down, and then all you have is put back up stone and wood and some of the other stuff they used. How sad it was for those who had seen the temple before. So inside the holy place, we have what we've talked about before. We have the table of showbread, we have the lampstands, and we have the altar of incense. Now the lampstands, there were 10 lampstands, one table of showbread, one altar of incense. Now these lampstands are in the traditional menorah look. I went back, there's no description in this context that tells us what the lampstands would look like. If they look like what was created when they made the Ark of the Covenant, it says that it had the branches, six branches. This shows seven, so I have to do some. I didn't do a ton of digging whether it was a singular with six branches, three on either side coming out. We don't know for sure that this is what the lampstands look like. Okay, so then we talked about the pillars here for a second. So the pillars themselves, anybody know the names of the pillars? Boaz was one of them, yes. I think I said it Joaquin. It was J-A-C-H-I-N. So this is strictly up to the discretion of how you choose to say it. It was Jachin or Joaquin. I don't know. That's just the way I read it. But yes, so you have one that was named Boaz. You had the other named, what I'm going to say is Joaquin. That's not an indictment on anybody else's way to say it. But these pillars, the right one being Joaquin, the left one being Boaz. Now, it says in 1 Kings 6 and 7, I think it's actually 1 Kings 7, that the height was 18 cubits and the circumference was 12 cubits around. So that's how big it was. So it was about 2 cubits in diameter, which would make it, you know, three feet across. And then we'll talk about the capitals here in a second. Now, you go to 2 Chronicles 3 and 4, it's going to tell you that the pillars are 35 cubits tall. And so here again is the importance of looking at both contexts to understand that most likely these were support structures with something up on top, similar to what your drawing is in the picture on the bottom of your page. So you have the capitals, whether they were on the bottom portion or on the top portion, the capitals were the topmost part of the pillars, and they were ornate. Let's see here. The capitals were of a lily design. It says it had netting designs. It had rows of pomegranates. Again, this is all artist depiction. These things that we're talking about now are all made of bronze. So when we move from the inside to the outside, the pillars are made of bronze. Now we're going to talk about the sea. This sea is cast of bronze as well. Dimensions, like 10 cubits in diameter and 5 cubits tall. Now that was talking about the sea itself, it didn't mention the oxen that were around it. So whether it was raised further or if that was just the bowl itself, we don't know. It said that it was also, the circumference was 30 cubits. So you're thinking about 15 foot in diameter, 7.5 foot tall, 45 foot around. Give me a comparison. What would this be similar to? Got to read my mind. Thinking of an above-ground swimming pool. So I looked up last night, a 15-foot diameter above-ground swimming pool normally is 52 inches tall with the water level below that, or the interior is 15 foot. So you're talking about almost stacking two above-ground swimming pools on top of each other, and this is what you've got sitting in the inner court of the temple. And like I said, this sea was meant for the priests to wash. Now, it doesn't give us any indication how they washed, what they washed, how they got up to the water, things that you don't know. All this was cast in bronze. So the oxen themselves, we'll come back to this in a second. The oxen themselves, it says that they were cast as one piece, and then it says they were cast in two rows. So it seems to me the way it's talking about is each oxen was cast individual. They made two rows of them, and they were all cast as, and I'll show you something in a second. That's an amazing feat to be able to cast that oxen. And we're going to talk about size in a second based on the dimension of the brazen sea. But those oxen may have been lifelike, meaning they may have been, I'm thinking of a cow. Oxen can be bigger, but I'm thinking about the normal size of a cow. That's the size that it could be. It says all their hindquarters were facing inward. And in this picture it's showing is maybe they were a support structure for the basin itself. It also said, as I'm thinking about it, it also said that it was, in one context it said it could hold 2,000 baths, in one context it said it could hold 3,000 baths. So depending on what size tub you got, I guess it depends on what you can do. That when I did the volume of it all, that holds roughly 9,900 gallons of water. They didn't have a water hose. So imagine how that thing got full as well. It had gourds around the rim. That here it doesn't show that, but that was a part of it too, is that it had gourds engraved, I think 10 per cubic in two rows. All right, now we're looking at the basin. So you have the basin and the stands. So the stands are essentially the cart. The basin's what goes in. The stands were 4 cubics by 4 cubics by 3 cubics tall, and there were 10 of them. And then there was a basin that was set inside. That was a cubic and, let's see here, the basins each were 4 cubics in diameter, if I've got that. No, not 4 cubics in diameter. Maybe 4 cubics around. And there were 10 basins as well. So the idea was is that they made these stands, and these stands were going to be able to be movable around, and these were for rinsing things or rinsing the sacrifices. They were used to clean, in a sense, as opposed to the sea, which was for the priests to wash in. They were all cast bronze. Their borders had lions, oxen, cherubim, all cast into them, even the borders between the frames. The frames had a pedestal above. Beneath beneath the lions, oxen, were wreaths of hanging work. So this is not a great depiction of this, but they're very ornate, cast bronze, stuff like that. Bronze wheels, bronze axles, very good workmanship. The wheels were like chariot's wheels. Bronze axles, rims, spokes, hubs, all of them were cast to support this basin. This basin could hold about 40 baths, and they kept 5 on one side and 5 on the other for cleaning for sacrifices. Now, you think about this. We'll get to this a little bit more, but the sacrifices that were had, you think the people bringing these sacrifices to the temple, they would need to be able to clean up. Because when we're talking about sacrifice, we just say the word, we don't really think about it. But you're talking about, killing and cleaning an animal, and you think about the different offerings, the fat offering and the different things that you would offer. It talks about went back and read some of these offerings between the peace and the grain and the burnt and everything else. You're talking about the fat of the animal and the kidneys. And the, this is a bloody process, and you would need all this to be able to do that. And then you think about the amount, which we'll get to in just a second, the amount of offerings that were had. All right, last thing that we'll talk about, or two things. So we're looking at the inner court of the temple. The inner court, let's see here, was built with three rows of stone around it and a row of cedar beams. So you've got this wall around it. And then it's interesting in this video, but we can see it here. It doesn't talk about the bronze altar. You don't read about the bronze altar in 1 Kings 6 and 7. You read about it in 2 Chronicles 4. And 4:1. This bronze altar was 20 cubits in length, 20 cubits in width, and 10 cubits high. So you're talking about a 30-foot by 30-foot square, 15-foot high, that they would make offering to. And that's where they would offer their offerings, this bronze altar. And so you think about the vast size of this altar that they've got. I mean, you're thinking 30 by 30 is a front half of this building almost. You know, that's what they're offering sacrifice about. And so that gives us an idea of the temple. Hopefully that was somewhat helpful. Now, I'll show a couple of videos and we'll go through them fairly quick, but you know, what was entailed in making the temple? So you think about how they made things. You know, we think about how rudimentary things are back then, but these men knew what they were doing. They were very well versed in what they did. So I'll show a couple different videos of how they break stone. And you think about how that this is still being done today. This is probably definitely the cheapest alternative, and it's probably one of the better ways to do it because of what it would take to get machinery to where you need to quarry stone. But this is how you break it. You put wedges in there, and then you break it apart. And you look at how well that broke apart. I've got another video, a couple of them. It's amazing how these men could do this and how well it can be done. You think about the time it took. It said that there was no hammering, no iron tools, no nothing was heard at the temple. So this was all done elsewhere. So here he's chiseling a hole out. Once he chisels a hole out, he's going to stick a wedge in there. Then he's going to take what I would think looks like a 20-pound sledgehammer, and he's going to start breaking it apart. And all that's doing is you're taking that energy and forcing it into the stone. You see the reverb on that hammer. That's energy coming back out. Think about two cars hitting head on. I mean, one's going to push back with the energy and the other. He's going to score the stone, and then he's going to break it apart. I mean, this video is, I think he's got four minutes of his video. I'm not going to show you anything else, I don't think, on this, but you think about how he breaks it apart. Now he just uses a pry bar, and this is simple mechanics. He's going to use a pry bar, and look how well that stone came out. So he's going to get down there. Now he's going to split it. Now he's got a special hammer that he can score the stone again, and within a minute or so, he's going to break this stone. You think about how many men were doing this, how many men were quarrying and everything else. I think he said 80,000 men were quarrying stone to build for not only, I mean, this was for the temple, but when Solomon had his palace built as well. So he's going to keep breaking it up. You think about the work that this is day in and day out for the 7 years that they built the temple. You know, they spent a lot of time quarrying. It also said, this is about Solomon's temple, that they had some of these things that were 10 cubits and 8 cubits big. You think about how big that is, 10 cubits being 15 by 15 if it was square, and how he just breaks them apart. And in real time, this guy's broke this stone down in about 4 minutes. So now, that looked like a smaller stone. So this guy's going to break that apart. Now, if you'd seen this stone laying in two pieces, you'd think there's no way that's going to be broken apart without some type of machinery. This guy is just using tough grit, some wedges, and he's going to break this thing apart. There. I can attest to this because we beat a lot of things out of boom and everything else, shafts and everything. That's tiring work. I don't know if you can see it on there, but there's a crack starting to form. So you think about the work that the Israelites put in and how this thing breaks apart. This is how they did it. Still a relatively clean edge as they do this sort of stuff. Something else that's interesting when you talk about building the temple is how they cast things. It talked about how Hiram knew what he was doing when he was casting things. So here's, you know, the art of casting, especially the way they cast. They were casting things in one piece as opposed to pieces. So this is a video of casting and the ornateness, and they cast these things in different pieces, and if you can't cast it as one piece, you've got to weld it together and everything else. They didn't have the ability to weld things together in the traditional sense, so you've got to make a mold. So you think about putting these oxen together, these bowls or anything else. You've got to make a mold, so maybe a plaster mold or something like that. You've got to carve it and sculpt it in the artistry that goes into that. Then you're going to take and you pour wax in it so that you can get the form that you're wanting. And then, does anybody know where it said that they cast all this stuff at? It was over by the Jordan. It was outside in the clay of the by the Jordan. Let's see, cast in the clay ground in the plain of the Jordan, and they gave between two different places. So they think about this. They're doing it outside. Now they're going to build different things because you got to heat bronze up to, I think they said, 2100 degrees to be able to do it. But you got to make a mold, then you got to cast it in wax, then you've got to put it down into the sand and pack it out, and then what they call wax removal or something like that. You find a way to drain the wax back out of it so that now you've got a perfect cast, and then you pour your bronze in. So here it shows you the mold. They pour the wax in. Those people scrape everything out, and then you have to leave. You know, this is an intricate process. You've got to leave places for air to escape so that this isn't porous. And if they're doing this in high quality time for God, then they're going to do it and do it right. So it's very ornate, very pure. They're gonna cast it in plaster, then they're going to heat it up and remove the wax, and then they pour in the bronze, and then they break it all apart, and there you've got, and see, they break it in pieces and they weld it. So give you an idea. This is very rudimentary, but this is still being done today. We use big gears like this, not quite this big, but in what we do. And you think about how they do it, they're going to dig into the ground, they're going to pack the ground, and they're going to make a form. So there you got where you're going to pour your gear. This is what they may have done in the valley of the Jordan, on the banks of the Jordan. They're going to go down, then they're going to put a top on it, and they're going to put a lot of weight over it to keep the metal from coming out. Then they got to heat up the metal and pour it in. So they're getting ready to pour. So they pour it and they cast it, and then they're going to see them pull it out. So there it is. It's been cast, and they're going to pull it out, and then they got to knock all that stuff off. You think about how they did this and how pure and how intricate this was and what they were trying to do. One other thing. Oops, hit the wrong button. So I don't know if y'all have heard of the Wall Street Bull. This would be a depiction of it. That at its height, it's 11 foot and 16 foot long. But this bull is sitting over by Wall Street, and it's bronze cast. So what we've got is probably half this size. But you think of the intricacy, and they put this thing together in several different pieces. And here you got Hiram, who cast this in the banks of the Jordan. How they were able to do that? I mean, you think about, you know, size wise, the head, when somebody stands up, that's about 6 foot tall. And depending on how these oxen were configured with the basin, you're talking about something very large. These men were very capable and took pride in what they were doing. And so as we talked about the temple, I just wanted to kind of give you an idea of some of the different stuff that, you know, the different ways and a visual aspect of everything that was going on, you know, how all this happened. Think about moving the timber all the way from Lebanon to the temple, you know, how they had to take it, form it into a raft, bring it in, carry it to the temple, how they had to quarry the stone and bring it. I did some looking how they quarried the stone and then brought it to the temple. Essentially, they just put it on sleds and they pulled it. And the way that you keep it moving is you keep pouring water in front so it'd pack the sand and it'd keep moving, but you just pull. I mean, just bring it in. And so it's very labor intensive. It took 7 years to build the temple. It took 13 years to build Solomon's palace. Flip over to the next page real quick, because that's, I didn't know if we'd get to that or not, because we've been discussing the kingdom and the temple, but Solomon's house. So you've got this picture here of the layout of what's being built in an addition to Jerusalem. So you see the top part, you've got the temple, you've got the altar, you've got the sea, you've got the stands, and then you've got Solomon's house. Solomon's house was even larger. Solomon's house had different components. It had the forest of Lebanon, it had the hall of pillars, it had the hall of the throne. Then you had his house, the part for Pharaoh's daughter, and you had the court. The forest of Lebanon alone was 100 cubits by 50 cubits by 30 cubits tall, with four rows of cedar pillars and cedar beams on the pillars. The hall of pillars was 50 by 30, and didn't give us a height. So you think about all the work that was being done. Solomon's house, he had his house, and he had the Pharaoh's daughter's house. We're not given dimensions on those things, and it seems to me for what Solomon's house was, it's kind of a footnote in this context, but what we're discussing is the United Kingdom, the building of the temple of God. So it may be a footnote for a reason. It doesn't need to overshine what Solomon did. And Solomon's house wasn't as ornate as God's house was, but it was larger for what he was doing. A part of the temple I didn't mention that you see in 2 Chronicles, you don't see in 1 Kings, is that temple also had precious stones in the walls. So that's, again, idea of comparing different chapters on this. All right, I think that's covered the most of what I was looking for. So we got a couple minutes. So let me ask you this question. What major items did Hiram make and what out of what? Yes, sir. So the two pillars, the capital bowls, 400 pomegranates for capitals, 10 stands and basins, the bronze sea, the 12 oxen. He made pails, shovels, bowls, utensils, all those things needed to cast all this stuff. And then it said Solomon, and I don't know if it's Solomon is used as maybe he had people make it, but then Solomon made the golden altar, the table of showbread, the 10 lampstands, the tong snuffers, cups of gold, hinges for the doors. It said he also made spoons, fire pans, 100 golden bowls, 10 tables, all kinds of stuff. So anyway, hopefully that gives you an idea of what the temple looked like. We'll kind of talk about it a little bit more as we move on into the dedication next time. But for now, that's good. Appreciate it, Neil. Thank you.